and welcome to the Linux Lads. As always, I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
And we have a special edition this week. We have Mark from the Binary Times. How are you, Mark?
I'm great. How are you? Hi, everyone.
Grand stuff. The reason he's here is that Mike is currently sunning his arse in Spain at the moment. So, or somewhere, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, so Mark has kindly agreed to step into his large shoes. So without further ado, first of all, we have a coupon code for Azure VPN. So that gets you 30% off their 3-month plan. They're a security-focused VPN provider based in Sweden, where the law doesn't require them to log traffic. They operate servers in Europe and North America. Their servers are owned and not rented, installed on location by their engineers and running Debian Linux. I realize I said Debian in the last episode. they provide a WireGuard and OpenVPN option. Their client is GPL version 2 licensed and is available on Linux. They take all major payment methods, including crypto. Also, you don't even have to give them an email address. So the code is LinuxLads. Make sure to click the green add code button to get the discount. And that's valid until the 1st of January 2020. So without further ado, Connor, you put this one in, and actually I saw this as well. They have a new Linux App Store website. It lets you find apps across all the different, like the Snap Store and the Flathub and everything.
Yeah, somebody messaged me this on Telegram. Name escapes me at the moment. It could have been Amulet. Anyway, I'll double check that, and I'll give a shout out in the show notes. What it is essentially it's a web store, and you search, and let's say you're searching for something like even something proprietary like Discord or something like that, Microsoft's Visual Studio Code or something, and you type it in and it says this is available as a Flatpak, a Snap, an app image, whatever it's available for, and you click on your preference, and or you might type in something and it's only available as a Flatpak, in which case the Flatpak will come up. So you can pick and choose whichever source that you want, your installation source, or if there's only one available, then that's the way you go, rather than having to go through your distribution repos, doing your apt-get if you're on Debian or Ubuntu, or doing your pacman commands or your dnf commands if you're on pacman commands if you're on Arch, or your dnf commands if you're on Fedora or something like that. It's just simple, click on it and it's available in those respective stores, the Flatpak store, the Snap store, or the App Image store. Is just a centralized way of searching for software, which I think is a very useful thing to have.
Yeah, I was just looking at the screenshots of it there. It looks very googly, and I did read in the article as well that other people thought so too, with the material design and everything. But you know, it looks slick, like it looks good. I personally wouldn't use it that much because the Ubuntu Software Center kind of already does that. So it collects Flatpaks and Snaps.
It doesn't do Flatpaks by default. You would have to add it in as far as more.
It's just Snaps, is it?
It's just Snaps. And if you're on Fedora or something like that, Fedora is a big champion of Flatpaks. So if you search for in their GNOME software center or whatever you want to call it, that will only show Flatpaks. So there might be something that's only available as a Snap and won't appear there. So they are kind of walling themselves off into little gardens where vast majority of things are available for all three platforms, but some things may not be available in one, may be available in the other, or and so on and so forth. So rather than adding Flatpak support if you're on Ubuntu, or adding Snap support on if you're in Fedora, this way it's you just search for something like VLC or something and it'll say this is available for all three platforms, and then you click on the Flatpak if that's your preference, or your Snap if that's your preference, and it will give you instructions on how to install it.
Yeah, I think it. I don't think it. It does anything like install it for you or anything like that. But yeah, I just actually opened it up here just to have a look.
It just seems to take you to whatever.
Yeah, I was just looking at Stellarium there. Yeah, it took me to the Flatpak store, or no, App Image. Sorry.
I'm clicking around as I'm on the website here. I just clicked on Etcher, and it literally, yeah, it brings you to whatever version that is. So if it's an App Image, it brings you to the App Image store. If it's Flatpak, it'll bring you to the Flat Hub.
Yeah, it's definitely useful. Mark?
Absolutely. Do you know what I like the most about it is the little icon in the bottom left corner tells you whether it's an App Image, a Snap, or a Flatpak. That's really nice, because when you look at, you know, the Ubuntu store, you might have two different applications and you don't really know whether it's a Snap or a Deb.
Yeah, I've noticed that myself, actually, like two versions come up and you don't actually know which one is the Snap and which one is the native one until you click into it.
Yeah, that's very true. I was just going to point that out. If you click into it and then you scroll down and it says source, this is coming from Snap, this is coming from Flatpak, this is coming from the default repositories. But you would have to drill down and go down to the bottom.
There we go, a little feature request for Canonical.
Absolutely.
Connor, you also put in the Librem 1 campaign will de-Google your life for $7.99 per month. So they're the privacy-oriented, like, Linux device company. We've all heard of them, I'm sure. They've launched a bundle of mobile apps and services for Android and iOS. So, I don't know. It's a bold claim, but, like, I don't know. I haven't actually honestly seen any demonstrations of this, or I haven't really looked at it too much lately. So, you know, for all I know, it's brilliant, but I'm doubtful a little bit.
This is from Purism. So Purism do their Librem laptops. They're also launching their Librem 5 phone whenever that comes out. We don't know, but their Librem 1 campaign, which is a secure cloud essentially. So they're doing Librem Mail, which is an encrypted email client, which presumably just will be able to do it's a client, so you'll be able to add on your own email. They'll also do their at Librem 1, I think, domain. Librem Chat is just essentially is Matrix, so a Matrix messaging app. So you'll be able to chat to anyone on Matrix, even if they're not in this Librem Chat service. Or you can install your Matrix app of choice and also speak to this Librem Chat. You don't have to use their app. Their Librem Social is, I believe, is just Mastodon. So they're using decentralized, established, either chat in the case of Matrix or Mastodon in the case of their social.
It's just very, I don't know. I'm not convinced. The fact that they're charging for it could hurt initially. Mark, have you seen this? Or
I have, yeah. And to be honest, when I saw it first, I thought it was great. You know, I love the idea because you're going to have all these services. You're going to have your laptop, your tablet, your phone, all using the same operating system and all being able to use these services. You know, it's a very compelling... Jesus, my phone is talking to me. What's that about? Anyway, sorry. You know, it's a very compelling collection of services they're putting together for everyone. And I really like the idea, but thinking about it, you're just thinking they're taking on a lot. Okay, they're using existing open source software and everything, and they're just... rebadging it, grand. I'd prefer to see them partnering with someone that's already doing this and maybe reselling it rather than trying to do it all on their own. I don't know, have they any expertise in this at all? It's not easy to kind of just build up infrastructure overnight. Like I was an Ubuntu One customer myself. You know, I did the whole music thing and everything, and that went by the wayside. And Ubuntu is a much larger company than Purism. I'd really love to see it succeed. I'd love to know how they're going to do it. That's my take on it.
Yeah. The last I heard, they'd completely burned through their crowdfunding money. So they're really at the mercy of their promises here. Like it's I don't know. I'm negative about it, but like I do, of course, wish them well. Like because it's a very admirable project. So it's, you know, we need people like this, you know, trying at least, you know, even if they don't get it right, fuck it. Like just someone else will pick up what you did and do it a little bit better, and that'll just keep happening. Like so. It's good. Like any effort is better than no effort, you know?
Absolutely. But that's the thing as well. They're pitching it very cheap, I think. Because like I'm getting email. Well, I get my email, kind of a groupware thing through Colab, but it costs about €120 a year. You know, whereas they're pitching mail, chat, VPN and social networking for $71 a year.
Yeah. $7.99
a month.
I'll get the latest pricing. But yeah, from the headline that I see, it's $7.99 a month.
Yeah, I guess it's not bad if you're willing to pay it. Like,
I think it's very cheap to be offering that amount of services for that price, and I wonder how sustainable is it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to give it a test drive if it ever became available in some fashion. Mm. But moving on to the next story we have there. Mark, you put this in. Canonical consolidates open infrastructure support and security offerings. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's just something that Canonical announced. When I saw it, I thought it was interesting. They've announced Ubuntu Advantage for Infrastructure, which is consolidating enterprise security, compliance and support offering that covers the full range of open source infrastructure capabilities for up to 10 years, right? So what they're saying from the blurb is the new approach continues Canonical's tradition of driving down costs and sets a new bar for efficiency in large-scale Linux enterprise operations. And it stands in direct contrast to the complexity and cost of offerings from Red Hat and VMware, which require additional licenses per host or per VM for capabilities like OpenStack and Kubernetes. And I don't know a lot about Red Hat licensing, but I know VMware can be a bit of a nightmare from what I understand. So, I mean, if Canonical can provide, you know, a consolidated enterprise offering, I would imagine it would be very attractive for a lot of CIOs out there, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like, I've only got limited kind of exposure to enterprise level infrastructure, but you know, I have a broad understanding. I would say, but yeah, I mean, Canonical are on the up and up; like, they're doing well. So, you know, I'm sure they're making the right decisions there. You know, they're going hard at the cloud space. It's cool, it's another Red Hat, really. Like, you love to see open source companies doing well, like, no matter what, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up we have Red Hat has changed their logo for the first time in 20 years. So I actually had a look at this just right now. It looks quite nice. I actually quite like it. It's definitely more like the existing Red Hat logo did have a very 90s kind of vibe to it. But yeah, the new one is good. It's very kind of Silicon Valley techie startup-y looking.
I love it. I think it's great. Why didn't they do this years ago, back in the 90s?
I definitely do like the new logo. It's cleaner. It's more modern. It's more recognizable if you're to turn it into monochrome. They've updated their font for the text of Red Hat itself as well, and get rid of the devil's advocate argument. Some people are saying, "Oh, they're doing this now because they've been acquired by IBM." Apparently, this was an internal project for a number of years, like a year or two, and the IBM talks was only in the last 12 months. So, I don't think there's any credence to saying that this was a direction coming from IBM management or anything like that. I think this was something that Red Hat were thinking about doing for a long time, but it's definitely cleaner. Probably more recognizable from a distance, which is a very good thing.
Yeah.
The old ones, I think the nickname for their logo was the Shadow Man.
Yeah, it looks like a kind of a black hat hacker kind of logo, like,
doesn't it?
Yeah. It was probably
what they wanted.
This is all speculation, but that was probably its origins. I mean, the whole black hat, grey hat, white hat. It's like, oh, but we're Red Hat. And that probably just stuck. That was probably genuinely its origins. But anyway, this is all speculation. I've no idea where its origins of its logo were from. But
yeah, that'd be interesting to find out. We'll move on to the next bit of news there. Mark put in Windows 10 is getting a Microsoft-built Linux kernel. I saw that. That was that's curious, all right. Like, but not all that surprising, to be honest, because they heart Linux these days, as we all know.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so I was just, like, checking out the article there. It's, it's kind of what you expect. I don't know.
Yeah, Jack posted on the dev blog of Microsoft this, beginning with the Windows Insider builds this summer, they're including an in-house custom-built Linux kernel to underpin the newest version of Windows Subsystem for Linux. I mean, for me, it makes total sense. You know, why emulate a kernel when you can, you know, have an actual kernel there? You know, makes things work better. They've already got a Linux underpinning for that Azure operating system, haven't they?
Yeah, they have their own Linux distribution that they run on Azure. I forget what they've named it, but yes.
So I suppose it's just following on from that, and it should make it a lot easier to do proper Linux work on Windows. Now, look, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, with the whole, dare I say it, you know, the whole embrace, extend, extinguish kind of malarkey. But, you know, look, it's good. And I think that the more, well, it can either be good from the respect that, okay, people are getting more exposure to free software and everything, and that's always a good thing. But I suppose on the flip side, they're going to be there using Windows to access that free software, their free Linux kernel and everything. And you've got all the telemetry that Windows is sending back to Microsoft still doing its thing in the background. So for me personally, if I wanted to use Linux, I'd just use Linux. I wouldn't...
I was thinking that myself.
You know,
I can see both sides of the argument of the Windows subsystem for Linux. I mean, there's some places where you're given a computer by work in work, and it's Windows, and that's it.
Yeah,
and if it's the kind of thing of. It's an IT policy that's kind of set by upper management, and even if you go to the IT guy saying, "Listen, I'm running Ubuntu, I'm running whatever, you know, it's secure, it's, you know," and you say, "Oh, I'm sorry, but it's policy or whatever," it's completely over above his head. This is a way of just saying, okay, I'm running Windows because I have to run Windows, but in order to get my job done, I need SSH, I need Bash, I need whatever. And this is just it's a nice way of doing that.
Absolutely.
And I can also see the argument of this. You're kind of giving people water in a dry desert kind of thing. Of you're introducing a bit of freedom to them, it's not just that. It's the kind of, some of these tools are genuinely as good enterprise tools, if not better enterprise tools than the ones that are available for Windows. So,
gateway drug.
Hey man, here's your free Linux. Try some more.
Next up, we've got Ubuntu 19.10 is to be named Eoin Ermine. What the fuck is that?
I
saw this earlier. I've been trying to pronounce it all day.
I'm the exact same thing. I looked this shit up and I googled it and I looked it up on freaking, or I'm using Google just as a word of saying I searched for it. I actually looked it up on DuckDuckGo. And apparently it's just another name for what we would call a stoat. So it's like,
I saw a picture of an ermine. I was like, oh, that's very cute. And then, but I was like an ermine. I thought that was like the fur or something. I didn't realize that was the animal. But what does Eoin mean?
I looked it up. It's kind of like dawn.
Into the dawn or something, isn't it?
Yeah, early morning or something like that. So it's essentially, it's like calling it dawn stoat.
Yeah.
If you want a translation of it. But that's of course, rubbish. Of course, it doesn't, neither of those begin with E, so they can't use it.
That's so bad. I don't like it. Sorry.
No.
Sorry, Ubuntu. I don't like it.
I mean, going from Disco Dingo to Eoin Ermine, what?
They're never. It's like freaking Beefy Miracle for Fedora. They're never going to live down Disco Dingo. Disco Dingo is absolutely fantastic as a name. It's hard to do. It's the tragic second album. they're not living up to the Disco Dingo.
Indeed.
Yeah, that was good, and the art and stuff for Disco Dingo was great. But yeah, they had some strange ones in the past as well. Like they've had what was the blimey, what was it? I can't remember the name now.
There was Hardy Heron.
Dapper Drake. It was around that era, you know.
AGF.
Anyway. Yeah, there was like Oryx or Eryx or.
There were some crazy Onyx ones around there.
What was that?
Yeah, there were some crazy ones around that time.
Ibex.
I think it was Onyx or something like that. Anyway, Ibex or something. Ibex you're right. Yeah.
In retrospect, that's a bit cool, actually.
Intrepid Ibex, wasn't it, I think?
I actually liked that one.
And what was the Onyx one? Ancelus? No. Anyway.
Or Cosmic Cuttlefish. Cosmic Cuttlefish was a good name.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I've got on my laptop right at the moment.
Cosmic. The images I saw of that just always reminded me, it was real kind of Call of Cthulhu stuff, like, you know?
Yeah, it has that vibe, all right,
it was very tentacly. Surprisingly enough, cuttlefish are not that tentacly. They do have tentacles, but like squids or squid and octopuses are the ones that are really long kind of tentacles, but not so much cuttlefish. Cuttlefish quite interesting are really, really good with their colour changes, and they can kind of do really fast pulses of waves of colour across their bodies. They're actually supposed to be really good at it. I've seen a lot of videos. Anyway,
sounds very trippy.
It would have made for fantastic wallpaper.
getting off into my Edinburgh moment.
Up next, we have the Boners. So, yes, we're going to try and start doing this a little bit more regularly. Because we like it. So Connor, Loon OS, that's what you put down.
Yeah, LunOS is something that I came across just very recently. And if anyone remembers WebOS from Palm, who was there around the time when iOS and Android were in their early days, WebOS from Palm was their own kind of rival to it. And then they didn't seem to get the traction that they wanted, and iOS and Android just kind of shot up. So they were kind of floundering for a while. Eventually, they got bought by HP.
And then it
got sold, and it's now from in... bought by LG. So if you buy an LG smart TV, the operating system that is running on the smart TV is actually WebOS. But this is a LunOS is a community forked version of WebOS, continuing on essentially what the Palm pre-phones were using.
Who open sourced WebOS? Was it HP or LG?
Yeah, I do know it's open source, but I don't know who actually open sourced it. Was it Palm? Was it HP? Was it LG? So it looks like somebody's ported it over to the PinePhone, and they have it running on the PinePhone dev kit, a video of which I will put in the show notes as well. It's quite stuttery. It's quite early days. The guy says there's kind of some visual artifacts, but it is running. So it's just a case of refining the port from now on, essentially. Once you have it ported over and you can see the visuals coming up on the screen of the dev kit, then that's your first hurdle, and then it's just a case of refinement after that. So don't expect the current state of it to be in perfect working order. He says there's visual artifacts, it's a bit slow and responsive to his touch, but all of that will come with further development. But it's good to see that the PinePhone dev kit is getting things like Ubuntu Touch, it's getting post-market OS running Plasma Mobile, it's getting this LunOS, which is a continuation of WebOS. So it's quite good. And I think rumor is that there might be Sailfish OS coming to it as well, but don't quote me on that. But it's good to have options whenever the PinePhone does get released.
Mark, you have a boner. Never gets old.
Right here, right now.
Ubuntu Touch OTA 9.
That's the reason why we call it that.
Yeah, I didn't come up with that. I just want to make that clear. Ubuntu Touch OTA 9 release, because Ubuntu Touch is fucking awesome, you have written.
Absolutely. I use Ubuntu Touch all the time, as it's my daily driver. Like, I have a business phone, but my own phone is running Ubuntu Touch and has been hardcore for the last few years. And I just absolutely love it, you know. And what are you running it on? Nexus 5, isn't it?
No, the OnePlus
1. Oh, the OnePlus 1. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because I'm actually using a BQ 4.5. And it's a bit limited because of the 1 gig of RAM. But I still love it. I mean, it works as a phone. Now, I did actually notice, I went to set my alarm there the other morning and it wouldn't work for me. But I checked it up and it's a known bug. But before that, only a few weeks ago, I'd set the alarm and it was grand. So it must be one of the latest updates that I'm on, because I'm following the, it's not the actual, I think I'm on the developer channel, you know, so I'm getting all the latest goodness all the time.
I think you can get developer, and there's beta as well. I think I've switched over from the stable over to the beta channel. The RC channel, sorry.
The RC channel,
It's about 80 to 90% there for me. Be little things that are annoying, but unfortunately I don't see ported over anytime soon would be things like a banking application or WhatsApp or something like that. I think there was a solution for WhatsApp, and then I forget what it was called, but there was an application that had access to WhatsApp, and then in the latest version they just says we couldn't get it to work or something, so they had to remove it in an updated version after that. I was looking through their change log, and unfortunately they had to remove the WhatsApp support. Some people in our
who needs WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing, isn't it? You really have to, you know, yeah, WhatsApp is definitely the middle ground. Like, it's like, okay, I guess I'll use it. Like, I don't really want to use it. I prefer everyone just use maybe Telegram or Signal or something. But no, I don't know. It's like 40% Telegram, 60% WhatsApp for me. Like,
yeah.
Because that's kind of where I'm at, because I don't use WhatsApp at all. And like the amount of groups I'm missing out on, because work groups, kind of playing soccer groups, they're all on WhatsApp, you know. So, and I'm saying, no, man, use Telegram, use Signal, and they're like, what's that, you know? And no one is prepared to even try them, and you're just going like, these are better platforms, you know. Not that I know what WhatsApp is like, because I don't use it. But anyway, you know, it's just annoying that people kind of get stuck into, you know, using it, I suppose, because everyone else is using it. But I find it's very fickle, because, you know, once the next shiny comes along, everyone, like, I suppose it was Facebook Messenger first, then it was WhatsApp. What'll it be next? Hopefully it'll be Signal or Telegram, for my sake anyway.
I see all sorts of people now that I know joining Telegram. Like, excellent. I will see, like, you know, the way it gives you the notification when one of your contacts joins Telegram.
Yeah.
Like, right. I get those like once, twice a week nowadays. Like, a lot of people seem to be getting on it. Like, people I never thought would have even heard of it.
I don't get that at all, unfortunately. I wish people would switch over to it on my personal context, but hardly anybody I know is on it. Other than like my geeky nerdy friends would use Signal, would use Telegram, but other than that, virtually everyone is on WhatsApp. And Mark, as you're saying, the social groups, if you want to go join your local soccer club or a bunch of guys going out and they're playing, kicking around kind of a football at the weekend, like meeting up on a Saturday just like a social group to get a bit of exercise, camaraderie and that sort of thing, there are 90% of the time they're going to be organizing it on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
So I think we'll start to wrap it up there. As always, we'll finish off with how you can get in touch. Obviously, I'd like to thank Mark for coming along,
You're
for filling in for Mike.
It was great.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, Mike can listen to this on Monday and he can see what it's like on the other side. Like, that should be interesting. I hope we didn't like slag him off too much. So linuxlads.com/support. That's where you can go if you'd like to contribute to the podcast. Obviously, it does cost us a little bit of money to host and produce the podcast, so any donations would be very, very gratefully received. If you want to catch up with us and get in touch with us, feel free. We don't care if you text us directly on Telegram or some shit. Like, honestly, just do it. Like, you can get us on all the short links, linuxlads.com/telegram. /Twitter/Facebook/Mastodon. So they'll all get you to those networks. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com. So any feedback or any suggestions or anything you didn't like, give us a shout. So we'll wrap this baby up. Thanks for coming, guys. Thanks for being here, Mark.
You're welcome.
We have been the Linux Lads. I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Mark.
Thanks very much. See you later.